The Trader Cobb Crypto Show, talking business in blockchain.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Trader Cobb Crypto Show. Today's guest is a bit of a big dog. I'm looking forward to having a chat here to Tim Grant of Drum G. Financial services. I'm looking forward to this, mate. Thank you for being on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much. Just got off a plane from New York and feeling fresh as a daisy.
Fresh as a daisy. Didn't know daisies felt fresh, but good to hear that you're happy and you're well and you're running into some Sydney sunshine for a change the last few weeks. Hey, listen, why don't you walk us through a little bit about what's got you into this space in the first place? Because everyone's got a rabbit hole they've gone down.
Everyone has an origin story.
Bring it.
What's my blockchain origin story? Working at UBS's hedge fund unit, UBS O'Connor, ended up going out to see some companies in Silicon Valley, March of 2015.
Yep.
Go in and see Ripple and Coinbase in the same day. Realize by the end of that day that there's something really significant material happening in this financial services space. This is going to change the world kind of feeling, but not really knowing quite how that was going to happen. And so got into it enough at that point to end up at R3. R3 from 2015 to 2017 was a really big part of the financial services ecosystem starting to lean in and thinking about how do we use this blockchain stuff? How do we make it real? A lot of hype, arguably some still floating about.
Yep.
And then eventually realizing that someone needs to build this stuff. Someone needs to actually deploy at scale into big regulated global financial institutions. And so Drum G was born to do exactly that.
Okay, well, that's a very big undertaking that you're taking on there.
It is a bit.
Where are you at? And I mean, what's the end vision? What are you trying to achieve? Connecting those dots?
Yeah, you need to cover a couple of pillars to build this whole thing on. And one of them was that tribalism is rife in this space.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of my blockchain's better than your blockchain and my solution's better than your solution. And as it turns out, if you really think about it from a delivering value into these institutions perspective, you shouldn't really care so much.
It doesn't
really
matter, right?
Yeah. Any more than you care about one operating system versus iOS versus Android. So we kind of decided to take a step back and look at it from there. And it would appear that very few companies are actually looking at it that way.
Yeah. Okay.
At the moment, and I suspect that's going to change. So that was our first view. Like, let's take a step back and see Consensus and Enterprise Ethereum, R3 Corda, Hyperledger, Digital Asset, Axony, all these guys as partners rather than competitors.
Yeah, okay.
So that was number one. Number two is, well, then you got to get the right sort of team together. And you kind of need that little combination of people who understand financial services, but also really understand blockchains.
Yeah.
And really understand things like security, because if you're deploying into a big company like JP Morgan, they're going to make you run through a whole ton of hoops to get there. So you get that team together, you make it global, because these institutions are global. So we're in New York, Bermuda, London, and Singapore right out of the gate. There's more than 20 of us now. And the last piece of the puzzle is, well, what are you going to build?
Yeah.
And so that's what we've kind of launched into is finding the right networks. And we like to call them networks rather than applications because they are networks.
Like, yes.
These blockchain things are networks, actually. And so we're building onto two different platforms right now. And the thing about blockchains is that they actually do a lot of really cool stuff, but for financial services, there's a whole bunch of stuff they just don't do. They're not designed to do. And so our idea is let all the smart people and all the smart money go into building these basic blockchains, these platforms, and we'll put our attention into doing the stuff on top that they don't do and deliver that as value to the client. So that's the core idea.
Okay, and as far as interest, have you got a lot? Where are you finding it?
So we were a bit stealthy for a while. The good news is because of where we've come from, we kind of know all the blockchain players in the space, which is handy. So we don't really have a sort of client acquisition problem. It's more of having something to sell them problem.
Products-wise, yeah.
So we spent a year, really, from last summer to this summer of 2018, trying to figure out the two things we were going to build, and then we got them. And now we've gone more public, and we've raised money from Consensus. Joe Lubin is on our board of directors, which is really exciting. He's a fascinating individual with an extraordinary vision. And really understood what we were doing and came in as our sole investor, and it just really allowed us to get out of the gate, which is really, really handy. And so we figured out these two use cases, and we do have a group of investment banks who are working with us on one. That's called Titanium, just a sort of working title for it. And what that is pricing over-the-counter assets on trading books in banks. So right now,
So creating a market?
Not so much creating market, but creating consensus-driven prices. And when I say, you've got to be careful using that term because it feels very blockchain-y.
Yeah.
But it's more like, you know, these things exist already, consensus-based pricing methodologies. We're just decentralizing it. But this is, you know, Credit Suisse is our public anchor tenant, but we're talking to all the other big banks around the world to join this network and be able to price all of their OTC securities in some consensus-based way. But what's cool about it is now they get to audit and see all their data, and potentially, which is one new thing that's never been done before, is allow them to sell that data on.
Yeah,
okay. It's kind of like being, if we like with in the Facebook world, what if we actually owned our data?
Yes.
And if they sold it, then we'd get paid for it. That doesn't happen yet. We're doing that for the banks.
Well, look, speaking of the banks, I mean, obviously you are working with some of those big banks. You just rattle off some names. I won't press it too much harder for more names. But what's the general consensus? I'm going to keep using the word a lot at the moment. What is the general consensus amongst these major global investment institutions regarding blockchain? I know they're open to it. Mm-hmm. What direction are they sort of focusing on as, I suppose, block one, stage one, however you want to pronounce that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Really, if you look at financial services enterprise blockchain, you know, T0 was really 2015. That was the year that, you know, digital asset really came into being, R3 came into being, Hyperledger, like, you know, Enterprise Ethereum was the following year. Like, that was when things really started. And having been in the space from the beginning and come straight out of a bank or in a hedge fund at the time, you've kind of watched this arc of interest, trying to do proof of concepts, trying to then figure out whether that can be made into real value, getting a little bit kind of into that trough of disillusionment. And I think I personally think we're coming out of that. Like, you've got, it's been now several years that many of these big institutions have been involved.
Had their eye on it, yeah.
And they've put some resources into it. They've got more than just one or two people. And now the use cases are starting to get, that's such a ubiquitous term, use cases, but they're really starting to get like commercial business value driven rather than it's exciting because it's
They're finding ways to make bank.
Real money.
Yeah.
Real cost savings or real new business models. And it's literally kind of, we're right on that cusp. But it, you know, even 6 months ago, I would have said it's going to be a while. But now these things are starting to get delivered. I know for us as an example, and there are many others, we're going to be delivering next year into production, real financial institutions on these networks, in the cloud. Microsoft's our partner as well. But you know, there's a lot of companies doing that right now. So the banks, I think, are starting to finally say, oh, this is going to move the needle. But then we've still got, you know, several years to go, but it's more real. Like, just as an example, if you look at, you know, I was in FIA, which is the Financial Industry Futures Industry Association in Chicago yesterday. And you've got on one of these panels the CME, ICE, ErisX, Chicago Board's Options Exchange, and, you know, DTCC, Fidelity, just kind of digital asset thing, TD Ameritrade, which is 11 million clients, has just invested into ErisX. You're like, well, it's happening. This isn't just and it's not just blockchain. It's actually crypto as well.
Well,
this is what we were hoping.
I mean, that's a question I want to bring to you, right? I mean, many of the viewers and listeners of this show are thinking, okay, blockchain, we know it's amazing. We know the technology is phenomenal. We know it's going to change the world. It's the new internet, 3.02, whatever you want to call it. We know that it's real. We know it exists and it's going to change things. But are we going to see any growth in the investments that we currently have? Is it going to affect Bitcoin? Is it going to affect Ethereum? Where are we going to see these price growth? Are we going to see this on exchanges where the you and I's of the, you know, investment community in this tokenized economy, are we going to see the benefits here? Or is it going to remain within these major institutions, the swap desks between each other? Are we going to be the people that started the movement but get screwed at the end of it? What are your take on that?
You know, it's a really good question. And there was I just saw earlier today, someone told me, so it was secondhand, but someone said that I think maybe Citi had done some analysis and found out that it was only 20 billion worth or 10 to 20 billion worth of money went in that created the $500 billion value of the market. Now, that's an interesting stat.
It's such a thin market. We saw this recently with the Tether scare.
Exactly.
We saw a $60 billion market cap printed by 2.5 billion moving in. And it's because the books are so thin.
It's very thinly traded.
Both ways,
it works
right?
Both ways. And so to your question about, you know, institutional versus retail, to me, I think it's what's really interesting about this, and I think TD Ameritrade in particular and Fidelity are two of the really interesting kind of, they've suddenly come out and they're not just dipping their toe in, going all in.
They've put their hands up.
They're saying, I'm going live. Yeah. And that's because 11 million customers at TD Ameritrade must care.
Yes.
They would only do it if their customers actually cared.
That's the only reason.
Meanwhile, Fidelity is one of the biggest asset managers in the world, but it's mainly managing money for individuals when you look at a lot of what they're doing. Suddenly, it's not so much about the institutional, it is a bit more about the retail. Now, the big question is, it's funny, everyone, the crypto-anarchic libertarian ideal that led this all to start.
Yeah.
Suddenly is starting to sort of look in the rearview mirror, and now we're seeing big globally regulated institutions putting stuff in place, but for who? It's actually for us.
Yes.
It's allowing us to
they're
do
following
things.
The lead
they're following
as they
the lead.
Should do. They're not herding us into a pit.
Yeah.
We're the ones saying we want this change, we want these options, and the big banks. I mean, I was discussing this last year, talking about the fact that, look, you know, why aren't the big institutions involved? Well, they will get involved. Why were they saying it's fraud, it's crap, it's rubbish? Because they don't know and they can't
That's
make
right.
money off it. The second Wall Street or any financial institution, because let's not beat around the bush. Financial institutions are there to make money for their clients 100%. And their shareholders. 100%. That's it. If they could make money selling this table, they would. They just don't care. They've started to find ways in, and those ways in are benefiting us. The answer to it for us, let's have some futures contracts traded on an institutional level that settles in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and some of those projects within the top 10. That way we can actually see some real growth within that space. So,
and that's happening now. Like ErisX is a great example. You know, look at who invested in ErisX. It's TD Ameritrade. Mm. I'm sure there'll be others who will come on board. What are they doing? They're going to do spot. They're going to do futures. It's CFTC regulated. Yeah. It's institutional grade. Just one example. But that I think portends, as that comes online next year, much more liquidity. That liquidity, in theory, look, I'm not here to say cryptocurrencies are going up or down, but in theory, it should make it a better ecosystem for crypto, retail crypto traders to go and use it for the reasons we want to use it.
So look, what is the future for yourself, Tim and Drum G?
So, you know, it's interesting because we've talked about blockchain, we kind of talked about crypto, and really, you know, they came into being as one thing.
You need a bridge.
And then they sort of went like that, and there was the crypto crew and the enterprise blockchain crew, and I think they're coming back together. So a lot of the infrastructure we're building at Drum G, we anticipate as convergence happens, as retail and as Wall Street and Main Street come together, as crypto and blockchain come together, as legacy infrastructure and new infrastructure comes together, as tokenized world becomes a very real thing, as utility tokens and security tokens start to become something very real, and there's some really interesting stuff coming down the pipe, that it's going to be one common infrastructure. So our big goal is to have built some of these pieces of infrastructure and for it to be used by everybody. So the vision is 5 years from now, we've got a lot of institutions using our infrastructure.
Excellent. Final question. Are you ready for this?
Hit me with it.
We compare blockchain and the internet. We hear it spoken about often being compared to each other. And the internet really started to do some commerce and get some, you know, start scratching at society. About 93, 94 was really being used properly.
Yep.
And we saw the boom, subsequent bust in the year 2000 or thereabouts. Now, where are we in blockchain? Are we still within that 93 to 2000 or are we beyond that? What year do you give us?
So this is a question that's been floating around for a few years now. I've heard other answers from the 60s, some people will say we're in the 60s for blockchain. I've heard that. And I've heard some people say that we're in the sort of 2000s already. I think it's slightly pre-93. So why do I say that? I have a very specific reason for that. Okay. If we look at what created that explosion, it was the browser moment.
Yes.
Right? It was Mosaic and Netscape.
Yep.
And us, we all have that memory.
We were included.
Suddenly we could see it.
Yeah.
We could touch it. I mean, we all probably remember that time we saw that little world, the Netscape with the N on it.
Oh,
it was the Netscape thing. And the world changed for us all. And we all remember that and then see what happened. I don't think that we've reached that point yet, but I think we're close. Now, one of the things that we are doing, and there's plenty of people looking at us, is trying to think of how do you interrogate this very abstract thing called the blockchain?
Mm.
Yes, there are blockchain explorers, but there is no mainstream ability to browse and understand the multidimensional nature of what blockchains do. And I think somewhere soon we're going to have something that makes that more accessible so that we can pick up our phones and suddenly it's not just buying and selling crypto, but there's some way of seeing and releasing the power of the blockchain that's almost upon us. I'm going to go ahead and say it's halfway through 1991.
Halfway through 1991. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first here on the Trader Cobb Crypto Show. Tim Grant of Drum G. Before we leave, where do the listeners and viewers find out more about you and your project?
DrumG.com.
That was pretty simple. Absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much. I wish you all the best of luck.
Have a great time while you're here in Sydney.
Hard not to.
We'll speak again down the track. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time. Bye for now.
The Trader Cobb Crypto Podcast is hosted by Craig Cobb. All Trader Cobb courses, products, and tools can be found at tradercobb.com because experience matters.